Welcome everybody, this is How To English, Teach and Learn with Gavin M.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary.
It's a new week, we've got a whole lot of stuff to deal with, let's just chat. And for anybody who hasn't listened to the show before, who are we? What are we doing here?
Gav, we are TEFL teachers, and both of us have a lot of experience. We have been teaching English as a foreign language for 30 years combined, that is. 15 for you, 15 for me.
That's right, Em.
So I feel like we're veterans, perhaps. We're getting on a bit.
We've been in the game a long time.
Have we? Okay, yes.
So we thought this might be an opportunity for us to share our wisdom and experience with the other TEFL teachers out there, and hopefully plenty of students who want to get some insights into what happens in the classroom and outside the classroom, possibly.
Exactly. And we have wisdom, but we also still make mistakes and we still doubt ourselves. So it's always good to get a second opinion, Gav, from you and also from our followers.
So I've jotted down a few of the highlights of this week that I thought I might share with you and the followers. And maybe I'd like to get some of your opinions on these things.
Me too, Gav. Highlights and lowlights, let's say. For example, do not update your computer 5 minutes before you're due to start teaching a lesson online.
That is a very good tip. Why, what happened?
Yeah, it didn't take 3 minutes. It said 3 minutes, but it was more like seven, which meant I started just on the hour that I was supposed to start.
And that's okay. You can start exactly on time.
I was on time, but I was panicking a bit because that little percentage bar was not going up as fast as I wanted it to. So just simple things like that, people. Just wait till the weekend or an evening and do your updates then.
Or just don't do any updates. And
No, really?
Well, and then you won't have to worry about... Oh, no, you will have to worry because you might get attacked or hacked or something.
Yeah, and also you might be out of date with your software and it might not be compatible. So don't listen to Gav, people. Always update, but maybe just at the right time.
Consult your IT specialist, not your TEFL teaching podcaster.
Okay. So, Gav, what's on your list this week?
Well, on the top of my list, I have a few words that I'd like to check with you because... You know, you're in the middle of a conversation and the student starts describing something and you think, oh, I know what they're going to ask me. They're going to ask me what that word is in English. And they're leading you further and further forward. And you're thinking, come on, brain. Come on, brain. Just push out that word. I know it's there somewhere. I've used it recently. But then you just can't remember.
Okay.
And the student looks so disappointed. And you think to yourself, why are they paying good money for this terrible lesson? So I think it's a good opportunity for us now to take a little time and I'll elicit from you some of the words that came up during my lesson. This is good for your brain. This is good for the followers' brains. Maybe they were thinking, oh, there's plenty of words deep down in there that I might need in a future lesson. This is a great opportunity to practice.
Can we do it in the teaching lesson style? So you be the student and I'll try to provide the missing word that you're describing or trying to explain?
Yes, that is exactly the best way to demonstrate this activity. So we're having a conversation about climbing because you know that's one of my favourite sports.
Right, yes.
Now you remember this clip. It's a specialised kind of device that goes around one's belt and it will help retain the rope. So while I'm climbing, it holds me in place.
That's exactly and as you're describing
can
this.
You feel it, Em? Your
I
brain is...
feel it. My activation mode, teacher mode is activated. And I'm like, yeah, that word. You know, I've always...
And the student continues and they say, yeah, you know, and you can... it's got like a little latch on it and it's got the metal bit and...
Yeah.
People also use them to hold their keys.
They're doing their job perfectly, aren't they? They're providing you all the necessary explanation and that is a great explanation. Now, I do know the word, but I've never remember if it's carabine or carabine or just carbon. No, is it carabine?
A carabiner?
Carabiner.
I think it is. I'm not completely sure about the pronunciation, but you did remember it perfectly. Of course, you mustn't confuse this with a screw gate.
Oh, well, I've never heard of that.
Well, I think you might know them, Em, because they're very similar to a carabiner. but it has a screwing device in it.
I
unlike
do know.
The
yeah.
carabiner, which you would describe as
like a little lever.
It is. It's a spring-loaded.
That's the one. Oh, you're right. There is the one with the little screw cover on it. Okay.
And again, it's different from a lanyard clip.
Oh.
As you probably recall, if you think about your lanyard hanging around your neck with your whistle on the end or your ID.
Yep.
The clip usually has a small lever on it to release the held item.
Okay.
So just picture a little metal lever clip.
Mm.
Again, probably spring-loaded to release your whistle, for example.
Okay.
So there's three rather similar devices.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, they will come to mind when your student starts describing them to you.
Hours of fun talking about the difference, which one's more secure, which situation you'd need those. You could take a long time on that.
And what colour's yours?
Yeah, all that.
There's some lovely metallic ones out there. Anyway, the conversation, of course, will jump to the next topic where the student says, yeah, well, it's that thing above your lip, you know, on your face, and they're pointing to it and everybody knows, but who knows the word?
Well, it's not your nose because that's further up, but it's the, oh.
Oh, I'm not talking about the philtrum.
Oh, not
Are you
the
thinking
philtrum.
About the philtrum? Oh, no, above the philtrum.
What?
So the philtrum is the small groove between your lip and your nose, but as your nose gets...
The vertical line that connects that,
at the top of the philtrum, just below the nose, you have the...
I have no idea.
The septum.
That's your nose... That's your nostril connection skin.
Placed between the nostrils and the philtrum, I think.
People get their pierced, don't they? Is that why you were talking about it?
Yes, that was the topic of our lesson. We were going through piercings. We were talking about body augmentation. Fascinating lesson. This is the septum.
So a septum piercing would be like a bull. You know, like when a bull has a ring through its nose.
Sorry, I was thinking of a bull.
Not a bull, no. Like when a bull has its nose pierced to be led by the nose. That's its septum.
Exactly. It's the little gap between the nostrils.
That did not come to mind, Gav. I would have had to Google that one.
We don't have time to think about Googling because the student has suddenly started talking about wildlife, water birds. You know the black bird? It's got black plumage, white feet. It's a medium-sized bird. They're very, very cute.
Lives in lakes and...
My friend's dog often chases them into the water and they make a funny noise.
Right.
Very cute.
It lives in rivers and lakes rather than the sea. So I think that sounds like a coot.
It is a coot, and it's not a moorhen because you remember moorhens have... the adults have the red beaks.
Mm, of course.
Distinctly different.
That's right. Coots' feet are fabulous if you look at them closely.
I would love to talk about coots further, but of course we're now into warfare. We're not talking about tunnels or defensive lines or mortar attacks, any of these things. We're thinking about those open tunnels that are dug in order to stand your soldiers inside and they might pop their head up and take a shot at the enemy.
Right, I know that one. That's trenches.
It is a trench. Yes, very good. You knew straight away, didn't you? I could see in your eyes.
Yeah. I mean, there must be a word for this emotion a teacher gets when that little part of your brain is activated. It's just amazing, isn't it? This Pavlovian response that you have as a teacher. Mm-hmm. Your brain goes into action mode.
Absolutely. I can feel the neurons in my brain just tapping away, trying to knock that wall down or open that door to the empty cavity. What should be a room full of words that I need to access, but instead it's just an empty space with no words to share with my students.
Interesting you imagine it like that, just this scrambling of neuron paths. Which one should I go down? You know, where is that information in my head?
And it's quite nice that once you get there, then you can kind of look around and think to yourself, all right, there are some other key words that I need to know, and I can actually access these. These are
if
quite
easy. If you get
easy.
To the right room, exactly. Yeah. I think the room idea is perfect. It's just whether you get into the right room and you've got the keys for the other doors around that room. It's easy when you've got the whole lot of keys on your carabiner, isn't it?
You can access them easily. Now, moving on to breeds of dogs, Em, the student says those dogs that are bred with the very flat faces, and I instantly thought, pug.
Yeah,
I know
that's
that.
What I thought, exactly. I was thinking, that's safe. I've got the key for that room, pug.
Sadly, they wanted the correct actual breed of the dog.
Okay, is that not pug then?
Well, we got to French bulldog.
I was going to say French bulldog, but they're different. They're not pugs.
Oh, well, maybe I made a mistake when I was teaching that one. Fortunately, this student stepped in. I have some students who are very keen to get there before I do, and I'm really happy, although I don't generally encourage them to use Google, but it's quite nice when they're able to find the correct word themselves.
Mm-hmm. You might want to check your dog breeds, though, Gav. I really think pugs and French bulldogs are different.
Yeah, I may have made a boo-boo there. We can come back to breeds of dogs in the next lesson, I think. Now, a wheel on an axle or shaft enabling a taut cable or belt passing over the wheel to move and change direction or transfer power between itself and the shaft would be...
Oh, my goodness. I'm in panic mode now. This is, like, stressful.
Well, picture that wheel with the rope on it and somebody is pulling one side and making a bale of hay rise up into the air. They must be using a...
winch. Winch. It's a winch.
It is a winch. I had pulley, but...
came winch... to me in a flash of inspiration. The key suddenly turned.
Oh.
I found the room.
Was it a trigger word from me?
No, it wasn't from you. I wasn't listening. Sorry. Oh. It helped me, Gav, because you were just constantly talking about it. So that helped me to have a minute to think, but... yeah, maybe a winch is more of a cylinder.
I'm thinking like handle, like wheel turning.
Yeah.
Whereas the pulley might be just you're pulling a rope and at the top there is a wheel of some kind.
Using some sort of bar system. There's a small difference.
That is a very small difference.
What was your student pulleying or winching?
We were remembering how windmills used to move the wheat to and from the mill.
Nice.
And these seem like everyday devices, but can you recall them in the moment you need them?
No, that was a hard one.
All right, the last one, Em, is do you remember that old sport of riding rather fast along a track, opposing another person, also on a horse, coming towards you, holding a big stick and trying to knock them off?
Yeah, that's jousting.
It is jousting. Now, what do jousters use?
A lance?
It is a wooden lance. Well done, Em's brain.
That was a long time coming, but I did get it. I was thinking javelin, but that's not good.
Oh,
yes, lance.
That's it, exactly. And then I guess we can lance things with lances. Em, what is to lance something?
I really don't want to describe it, but it's usually to sort of medically pop a boil so that all the stuff comes out.
Ooh, that's to lance.
Yeah. You've given some great descriptions of exactly what it's like when you're in a lesson teaching and the students are talking, and it's easy enough to just go along with what they're saying and nod, but when they're struggling and spending 30 seconds to describe a word, that's really your job as a teacher to step in and say, that is... that word.
And if your brain cannot provide that word, what are your suggestions?
What are my suggestions? Say you'll provide that word next lesson. You'll email that word later. You'll Google that word in the lesson and try and find it during another conversation. But I wouldn't tell them that. I don't know.
I'll come back to it later.
All right.
Well, you could say to the student, do you know the word in your language? Spell it to me and I'll translate it.
You could do that too.
Could do that real time on Google Translate, for example. You can be searching furiously in the background. If you're online, you could put in what's that thing that people put keys on, and then hopefully there'll be a list there, or breeds of dog, or waterfowl.
Yeah, or if all else fails, just say, yeah, we don't have a word for that in English.
No, we said we're not going to make it up, Em.
No, don't lie, people, don't lie. We don't call coots coots. We just say those birds with the white feet. There's no word for it, no. Gav, it must be time for a break.
Sure. All this teaching and learning is exhausting.
I'll put on the kettle.
Followers, if you enjoy listening to our podcast, watching our show on YouTube or reading the transcription on our website, show your support by visiting ko-fi.com. ko-fi.com/howtoenglishpod.
And get us a coffee to show your appreciation.
Links in our show notes.
But I had my own lengthy explanation to give this week because I had to describe the difference between own and owe.
Oh.
Which actually in a sentence sound quite similar.
Emma, are they that similar then?
Well, to owe money and to own a car.
So owe money is when you borrow it and you have a debt with somebody and you need to return that, you owe money.
Mm.
And to own a car is to possess, to have, to say, this is my car. It's not your car and you can't have it.
Yeah, I found myself talking a lot. I found myself giving this very long, complex explanation. And
that's never a good thing, Em.
It's not. I was
as a teacher,
talking too much.
You get that sinking feeling and you can see the student's attention is fading.
Yeah, they kind of had it and then they lost it. And I was just trying to scramble back to a very clear definition. But I took a long, very complicated route to get to it. But yes, in the end, I said, own, it's mine. Oh, I need to give it to you.
Well, it was yours and you want it back.
That is another way to describe it, but it does get complicated when you start talking about yours and you and them, and that was my problem. Mm. It's when you owe money to other people, and no, I couldn't use owe in the sentence, so it's when you need to give money to other people. You can see where it got messy.
I can imagine it.
Yeah.
I guess using synonyms can also help. So when I was trying to explain to you what I think the use is, I was using words like debt and borrow.
Yes.
So hopefully the students can connect those more familiar words.
Yes.
With the new word. The
problem with that is debt they don't recognise because it's got a silent B in it.
It's not debit.
They don't know. And that's the other problem. They think debit is the same as debt. So that was another avenue to go down. And the other problem is borrow. Come on, Gav. How many students have you got that remember the difference between borrow and lend?
Oh, very few.
So it's hard when you're trying to explain a concept without using the words that are confusing. So it wasn't good. Must do better next time with those words.
Definitely. Em, I had a very arty week this week.
In what way?
A couple of my students were very keen to talk about art and painting. The first one had recently read a Frida Kahlo book. So we found ourselves talking about Frida Kahlo, which was very, very interesting. The other student had returned from Venice and was very keen to talk about Bellini.
Mm.
And what a fantastic painter Bellini was.
Have you got anything to add to a conversation about these things? Had you heard of them before?
I had some vague knowledge of these artists, but maybe I'll throw it back to you. What would you do in this situation if a student says, I really like this artist?
Well, first I would ask why and what pieces of that artist have they seen? What pieces of that artist?
Like an arm or a leg?
Yes. What have they seen? What exhibitions have they been to? What's their favourite piece, their favourite painting or sculpture?
Can you elevate the vocabulary of this lesson, even if you're not ever so familiar with art itself and the action or the processes of it?
That is a very good question.
Because that's what we're here for. We're here to push our students to understand, to learn some new words.
Well, I think if I didn't feel confident, I would say maybe let's have a lesson about this topic and I'll prepare some more vocabulary.
Oh, you scaredy cat.
Well, that is a good strategy. And I wouldn't say it like that. I'd say to the student, well, why don't you choose your favourite painting and next week we can talk about that painting and you can describe what you like about it, and then you give yourself time to plan it. But if you're going to do it Gav-styly...
Well, I was going to say it's a wasted opportunity. When the student is so excited about something and has offered a topic, I think I want to grab it by the horns and say, let's discuss this, let's explore it, let's see where we can take it. So what I decided to do, being an online lesson, of course, if you're in the classroom, you might be able to find another way to do this. Grab a laptop.
Okay.
Get your mobile phone out.
Always looks good.
I searched for an interesting article all about Frida Kahlo, and we talked about that. It was absolutely fascinating, brilliant conversation. And we got quite deep into the topic. I got to find out my students' opinions on this artist. And I also went to the National Gallery and we took a look at a Bellini painting.
Lovely.
And there was a description down the side and it was quite high level English. So we really explored the vocabulary and the student was able to discuss in detail their interests.
That is one of the many perks of teaching online, Gav. These are the things that are at your fingertips. But going back to my idea, if it's in a classroom, I would give myself a bit of extra time to do some photocopying, maybe. Get some pictures of those things you've just mentioned.
I love the idea of asking your student to prepare something for the next lesson. And that does give the teacher a bit more time to prepare, as you said.
Yeah, if you're confident enough to do it in the moment, definitely go for it. Gav, it's time for What Would Gav Do?
Oh, is it time for that already?
Yes,
okay,
no jingle for this one. But I have a student, every time he makes a mistake and I correct him, he says, sorry.
Ah, what do you say?
No, that's my question for you. What would you do if that happened to you in a lesson?
Is it a new student?
Not that new. I've been teaching him for, let's say, 4 months.
Is it a group lesson?
Yes.
I think I would just ignore it.
Mm.
I don't think you can really deal with it. And maybe they just apologise even in their own language if they make a mistake. So this could just be their normal behaviour.
So you feel like they're entitled to say sorry if that's how they feel?
Of course. They can say whatever they want as long as it's polite.
Mm.
So it's sorry as in an apology. It's not sorry as in I don't understand what you mean or how dare you interrupt me while I'm speaking English.
No, no, it's sorry as in I'm sorry I made a mistake.
And what do you do in this situation?
What I did was I said you don't need to say sorry. It's not necessary.
Hmm. And did it work?
Yeah. They said sorry, but yeah.
Do you think they felt uncomfortable being corrected for their polite behaviour?
No, I think it was a moment of a lesson and it was then forgotten. I just hope he remembers not to say sorry every time. I found it a bit distracting.
Why?
I don't know. I just thought it was a bit strange and I felt like I was causing him distress, I think. So I don't like to think of it like that, you know, me correcting every time. Should be responded to by sorry.
It's quite nice though, and it's sorry in English, so
yeah, but
they've got this automatic reply for when they make a mistake.
But I just said there's nothing to apologise for. You don't need to say sorry because it's not a bad thing to make a mistake. So I want to make that clear that it's not something you need to be embarrassed about or sorry about.
Do the other students apologise for
making
mistakes?
No, this is the only student I've ever really had.
And it's not contagious? The other students aren't picking up this habit.
Sorry is not contagious. No, it's not. So it's only him. Well, thanks for your perspective on it, Gav. Good to know.
I think you dealt with it very well. Em, there's a grammatical error that keeps reappearing in my class, and I'm afraid it may be spreading amongst all the students.
Oh, that sounds bad. You mean one student's making a mistake and the others are all picking up on it and using the same phrase to make the same mistake.
They are. And I have tried to be pretty strict with this first student who started this bad habit in the class, but it doesn't seem to be going away.
What is it?
They're relative pronouns, who, which, and where. The students keep saying, he's a person which. And I keep saying, which? And they say, who? But every time. Every time the same mistake. What would M do?
Well, that's hard. So this student has never got it right, but the other students are now starting to use which instead of who. I think I'd have to devote a whole lesson. This seems to be my answer to everything. Devote a lesson to it, Gav. Have a whole lesson about it.
Well, say I'll come back to that next week.
No, just keep repeating the correction, but I think you might need to go into it more and to make it more memorable. In a lesson plan type way.
So dedicating the full lesson to it, having a range of activities. Surely there's not much you could do, really. It's a person who, it's a thing which.
Well, that's it.
It's just a place where.
Spend 20 minutes having that really drilled into them, where they just have to fill in the gap of the sentence.
But they know it, Em. If I put down a sentence and I say, please complete the sentence and put, is it who, which, or where,
like,
they will get
easy.
It right every
why
single time,
100%. This? Yes, and then you say at the end, why do you think we've done this today, class? Easy.
They won't say, I don't know. They'll say, because we always get it wrong and you always correct us, but we actually know it.
Well, there we go. That's it. I think it has to be addressed in a very...
formal, strict.
Yeah, to make your point. So that's what I'd do.
They know my point. They've seen my point many times.
What else
it's not pointy enough. What I did...
Yeah.
What Gav did...
What did you do?
I said to them, forget who... which and where, and say that.
I'm shaking my head.
Why are you shaking your head, Em? Because it doesn't work on podcasts.
No. Because there are rules to that.
Yeah, but if they're going to say a person which, then forget it. Let's just use that for everything.
Is that okay for everything, then? Have you checked
that? Is that okay for everything?
Yes. Have you checked that?
Well.
Have you checked that?
Before I answer that question, Em, can I just sing to you Gottlieb's hit single from...
I don't know how you say that, but it isn't Goethe because that's the German poet and it isn't Goethe either.
Gottlieb's 2011 super hit, Somebody That I Used to Know.
Are you actually going to sing?
No, I'm not going to sing. Well, let's just jump to the point. Em, do you remember the line from that song?
Yes.
Now... you're just somebody
that I used to know.
Now, if you pop to Grammarly.com, they're a bit down on Gottlieb's song.
Are they?
They tell us that it should be somebody who, because it refers to a person. What are your thoughts on that?
That's fine.
That is fine?
that is fine.
What do you mean, that Grammarly point?
No. The word that is fine. I think I'm, you know what, I'm mixing up what's not good sometimes. You can't use what as a relative pronoun.
Well, apparently you're not supposed to use that for a person. You're supposed to use who.
Forget it. It's fine. It sounds fine.
So you agree with me. So it's okay for my students to use that instead of who.
I think you've got a harder fight to get all your students to change their relative pronouns to that. Personally, that sounds impossible.
Oh, no. Have I made it even worse?
You have, because they're automatically using who or which or whatever.
Incorrectly.
But you're now saying eradicate all those words from your vocabulary and instead use another word.
Well, I did notice with one of the students that they started saying that.
So it is working.
It is for one of them.
Was it the one that makes the mistake all
the
time?
No, sadly, it wasn't.
This is something I've been thinking about this week, Gav. The millions of combinations we have as teachers to not just correct, but teach.
And to fail to teach and to teach incorrectly.
It's just phenomenal, isn't it? The variety of methods you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, but I often do think, was it the right choice? Did that work? Was I doing the right thing for that person? And in a group, they all might need a different way of correction and a different method of remembering. So all you can do as a teacher is just give them a few options. I don't think you want to overwhelm them too much.
No. Again, teacher talk time should be reduced because you can feel the threads of knowledge unraveling in front of you. The more you talk, the less engaged the students become.
And often the more simple the rule or the more basic the idea, the easier it is to remember.
Mm-hmm. So keep your explanations simple.
You'll have to let me know how that battle develops.
Well, I thought that was a good idea, but now I'm starting to think that was not.
And now you're just somebody that I used to know. And now you're just somebody who I used to know. I think the first one sounds a lot better.
Yeah, let's change English. I'd like to play a Guess the Missing Word game with you as part of...
Quiz of the Week. Guess the Missing Word.
That's right. It's based on a game called Blankety Blank, where you had... two contestants, a host, and a panel of C-listed celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
And the host would ask the first contestant to complete a sentence with a missing word, and the contestant would write down the missing word.
Simple instructions makes it simple, make it easy. I'm lost. Go on. I'm going to write down a word that's in a gap that you're going to provide.
And in the show, the panel would also write down a word. And for every match we have between the contestant and the panel, the contestant will get a point.
Did you get that, followers? Crystal clear, Gav.
And then the next contestant gets a different sentence and it all starts over again.
As I always say in my lessons, let's just do it and we'll work it out as we go along.
As this is a one-to-one, I'll give you a sentence and I want you to write down which word you'd like to use in that sentence. And then I will guess which word I think you've written.
Okay.
And if I guess the right word, you get a point for that.
I get a point too.
We both get a point. It's amazing. So I'm going to try really hard to guess what word you're writing in the space. And one extra rule.
What's that?
There's a maximum of 3 words for each gap.
What do you mean? It's a phrase. It could be a 3-word phrase.
You're allowed up to 3 words.
Right.
So it's not just a single word. It can be one word, could be 2 words. But maximum 3 words.
Okay.
Keep it simple, Em. Let's begin. Sentence number 1. Have you got your pen and paper ready?
Yes.
And I hope the followers are going to take part 2.
How will that work for them to play?
They're also going to write down a word. And if I guess the same word, they also get a point.
Right.
Let's begin. Number 1. My favourite toy as a child was a blank, which my parents gave me for my 12th birthday. I'll read the sentence again. My favourite toy as a child was a blank, which my parents gave me for my 12th birthday. So you need to think, what was this gift? Write it down, Em. Maximum 3 words.
I've written it.
Right, I'm going to write down what I think you've written as well. And I want you to read the sentence back to me, but this time tell me what word you put in the blank.
I wrote, my favourite toy as a child was a teddy bear, which my parents gave me for my 12th birthday.
Teddy bear.
What did you write?
I've written yo-yo.
Yo-yo, no.
That wasn't right, was it? I'm sorry. We didn't get any points that time.
No. So we've both got to get the word for a point.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Ed, would you like to read the next sentence and I'll be the contestant?
Yes. Number 2. My neighbour has several blanks in her back garden. I can see them from over the fence.
That is a good sentence. Now, let me think. Could you read it again, Em?
My neighbour has several blanks in her back garden. I can see them from over the fence.
I'm going to write down my word.
Me too. Can you read your sentence, please, with the missing word?
I can. Number 2. My neighbour has several gnomes in her back garden. I can see them from over the fence.
And I wrote... Garden gnomes.
Garden gnomes.
Ding, ding, ding.
1 point each, Em. Well done.
With their little fishing rods and funny hats.
That's it, exactly. Right, I'm going to read the next sentence. Number 3. My favourite dish is definitely blank. I've eaten it many times. Again. My favourite dish is definitely blank. I've eaten it many times. I've got an idea. I think I know what you're going to write, Em.
Okay, I'm ready.
Read the sentence back to me.
My favourite dish is definitely sourdough bread with avocado.
Em, it's 3 words.
Oh, yeah. My favourite meal is definitely avocado toast. I've eaten it many times.
Oh, no. I've written lasagna.
What? No, I never eat lasagna.
Oh, I'm terrible at this game. I'm sorry, we didn't get any points for that.
I only eat lasagna when I'm ill.
When you're ill?
Yeah, it's my comfort food.
Ah, it sounds very comforting, all those layers of pasta, bechamel sauce and mince.
Yes, it is. Okay, Gav, your turn. Number 4. My English teacher, Gav, would describe himself as a blank person.
Blank. Again, sorry.
My English teacher, Gav, would describe himself as a blank person.
Right. I have a word.
I also have a word.
Let me read this back to you. My English teacher, Gav, would describe himself as a friendly person.
I wrote energetic.
That is also true.
and friendly?
I think I'm friendly first and energetic second.
Right, okay.
How would your students describe you?
Well, shall we make it a sentence? You write your word, I'll write my word.
Number five.
My students would describe me as a professional teacher. What was your word?
My word is not professional. It is, in fact, punctual.
Okay, that's also me. Yes, that's good.
Oh, no points again, Em. We're quite terrible at this. We're on a different wavelength.
But you can see in a group it would be good because you'd probably get more right answers.
That's it, exactly. So you go around the classroom getting different answers. Make sure the students are writing down their answers and then you know they're not cheating.
Yes, that's important.
And probably the most important thing, which I often forget to do, is to ask them how many points they got at the end and who's the winner. Usually just say, bye.
You mean make it a game, is that what you say?
That's the one. Yes, I always forget to ask them how many points they have. How many points do you have?
No idea.
No, me neither.
One, I think.
I think I got a couple, somehow.
Okay.
That was a fun demonstration.
That was a good game.
So what did we learn? What did we practice, Em, in that activity?
Lots of things. You've got to make sure the right word is in the space. So you've got to make sure it's a verb or a noun or an adjective.
Make sure the students are following the rules and only using how many words?
Three, maximum.
Good.
And synonyms, I suppose, would come up as well, because some of these words would be quite similar. Vocabulary groups like garden furniture and things like that. Gnomes.
Okay.
It's a lot. It's good.
So we're looking at nouns. We're looking at some verbs. We had some adjectives. How would your students describe you?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're looking at some prepositions. So there might be some dependent prepositions in some of your sentences.
Yeah, it's all about sentence structure, isn't it? Making sure that it fits in the space.
That's it. Verb forms, for example. Is it a gerund? Is it infinitive? Is it bare?
So would you give them the point if the grammar's wrong? Or you would just say, yeah, that's great. You just got to change it a little bit. If, for example, the student wrote, at the weekend, I really enjoy play football, would they get that right?
I think it's okay because they got the concept. I would just double check to make sure they knew what the correct grammar was there.
So just feed in the correct grammar afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, well done. Yes, you got it right. But don't forget playing football.
Yes, that's it.
Nice. Blankety blank, blankety blank.
Ding, ding.
Blankety blank.
That's it. So what I'll do is I'll upload the worksheet to our show notes, Em.
Cool. And a video clip of the original show back in the 80s.
That is also a very good idea for some inspiration. And some very wide collars.
Yes. And big hair.
True. Em, it's been lots of fun again. Thank you for recalling your week of teaching and learning. I hope the followers are able to glean a little inspiration from today's show.
Looking forward to doing it all again next time, Gav.
That's it. Speak to you again soon.